This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Kyle, Dave, and Jimmy, and today we are continuing our Rooks and Vets coverage of Sci-Fi's The Magicians, Season 5. This is going to be Episode 11, entitled Be the Hymen, and welcome back to the world of the living to our favorite little pervert.
I don't know if we would say favorite after we killed him. Well, he almost got killed across the board in our Bang Hill Mary last episode. But yeah, it's always a pleasure to see Hymen. He's always some comedic humor. You know, it's always a pleasant surprise.
Almost across the board.
Almost.
Exactly correct. Yeah. I stood up for our boy. I banged him last episode. Luke did not have a chance to voice his grievances, but he said from off the podcast that he was disappointed in how many of us killed off Hymen.
I totally agree with Luke when I say that I love Hymen, but I also want to say that this episode proved our point that he cannot act, he cannot do what he needs to do in person. He has no in-person abilities.
Kill him.
Kill.
Yeah, he doesn't know what to do with his body. But I will say that I'm hyped that we have been talking about, I feel like we've done the Be the Nickel and shit so many times, and I didn't even realize that there was an episode later in the season called Be the Hymen. That's fucking awesome.
So fitting.
Anything else to say before we start like going into the scenes and stuff?
I just also want to say that when I was watching the little recap in the beginning, it was showing like Umber scenes and then Fog 17. And I was like, oh shit, what the fuck is going to happen in this episode? Chaos ensued.
So as always, we like splitting our character stories into buckets, just makes it easier to follow along. So this episode, what we're going to do is follow the whole squad while they're together for the first couple of scenes in the episode. And then when they split up, we are also going to split up and we're going to cover Elliot, Fenn, Margo, and Josh in Vancouver first, followed by Katie and Alice and their whole operation with Marina and getting the heist book back, and then Penny and Julia at Break Bills. So without further ado, the first scene is Margo and Josh actually talking about Julia's pregnancy. And Josh is just like, hey man, aren't these contraceptive wards supposed to be foolproof? Like, are you sure everything's good with you? We don't want to be having a werewolf litter or anything.
Margo is on her A game this episode. I laughed so many times out loud with her. What's the exact line when she's getting ready to put her eyeball back in? What are they talking about? And she's like, fucking adorable. Or something as she's putting the eyeball back in.
They're talking about the litter and Josh is like, well, it wouldn't be good or whatever, but could be adorable.
Yeah.
Just jams the eye back into her head.
Yeah. I also like Josh's little reaction to it because obviously it's not a fun thing to look at, but she lights up when he says clean slate. Cause she's kind of questioning, like, I thought we were broken up or whatever. And he was like, you know, I think you kind of risking your sanity to get me out of the taker world, puts us on a clean slate. And she's just kind of beaming afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
They made up. I think we can officially say that they made up.
Yeah, man. They go straight to the makeup sex. And Margo's just like, you're wearing three fucking rubbers, dude. I don't care. That brings us to same scene, New York apartment with Penny and Julia finally getting a chance to talk about the pregnancy, which is already in the third trimester, despite Penny not even knowing that Julia is pregnant. This was a pretty good scene. I mean, it gets cut short by Alice, but Penny starts to kind of say that we broke up for good reasons and none of that has changed. But he starts to get personal and says, my dad wasn't there and that's not going to fly with me. Like, I want to be there for the kid.
Yeah, the classic little trope, but I think they did his backstory really well throughout this entire episode. Mm-hmm. Something that I didn't really ever think about, or I guess I haven't thought about in a while, of, you know, what his backstory is, because he's so kind of plays everything close to the chest, but I thought it was nice.
But like I said, Alice interrupts this little heart-to-heart going on with news that Elliot and Fenn just collapsed in the elevator, which will bring us to Castle Whitespire, actually, and Elliot, Fenn, Margot, and Josh are all kind of waking up in this trance, I guess you would call it, but Margot has been here before, and we run into this energetic emanation of the god Ember. And it's pretty good to see Ember. I'm not going to lie. As a rook, seeing this for the first time, I'm like, oh, sweet, Ember's back, familiar face, up to his same BS.
Yeah, sure, he wasn't the greatest character, but like, it's been how many seasons since we've last seen him, so... It's been really cool to see that reintroduction.
Yeah, like when I'm trying to think, I don't think it's, is it the season one finale when they kill him? Like when he just walks into the throne room, it's like, okay, shit's going to get a little crazy here. So whenever he's around, you know, obviously that.
Yeah, I just want to rewind a little bit. How sad was it when Elliot and Fenn wake up, quote unquote, or appear, and he's saying, is this a dream? And she's like, this can't be. You're nice to me in my dreams. Mm.
Oh, that's so true.
This is a tough episode for Fenn. Finally, yep. It's like they were throwing it in our face how probably off screen she was just being talked down to by our MCs throughout the whole series. And I think this is the first time they're just like showing it. Like, this is how Fenn is treated. It's not a good look for our heroes. Mm-hmm. And it's a really sad look for Fenn. You know, I felt so bad for her.
Yep.
Especially when she's trying to do her thing, you know, like, sure, she sometimes like kind of gets carried away with things, but she's, at the end of the day, she's a great person and one of the more calm voices in the group, I feel like. So it sucks seeing her get shit on like this.
I will reserve my Fenn comments until we get to the her and Elliot speaking in Vancouver.
Okay.
Sounds good. So with that, Ember, obviously we've seen this emanation of Ember before. It only comes when there's a tragedy that is striking Fillory. So he is forewarning of impending apocalypse on Fillory, and they, as the surviving High Kings, that's why he brought them there.
Your kingdom rests on the knife's edge of annihilation.
It's like, this is his world and he just doesn't care at all anymore.
He likes the chaos, dude.
I guess he likes the chaos.
He's literally like Hyman. He just likes to watch crazy shit happen.
Before we finish off the rest of this Ember dream or whatever you want to call it, we get this scene where Lipson is brought to the New York apartment and evaluates the unconscious. I refer to them as the High Kings, Josh, Margot, Elliot, and...
Well, Fenn's there, so not a High King, but...
Yeah, Fenn's High
Fenn's
King.
Fenn's a High King.
Oh, she is.
Former High King.
Former High King.
High King Fenn
that.
The Toeless.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Put some respect on that name, Dave.
I don't know how I forgot that.
So Lipson is evaluating them while they're all unconscious. Alice, Penny, and Julia are also there. And Lipson starts to question Julia, like, hey, you were not pregnant when I saw you 2 weeks ago. Accelerated pregnancies can be potentially dangerous. And on top of that, you are carrying this traveler hybrid baby, which has its own set of complications.
No, I just like that she kind of brings us back to reality, like, this shit isn't normal. The fact that you're this pregnant in 2 weeks and like you haven't seen a doctor at all about this. Granted, she hasn't had really a chance to, but this is definitely something that needs attention, you know? So I'm glad she brought that up because the science behind it is definitely not correct.
And we had already known about kind of her abilities that she showed us in the dungeon where she was able to travel outside of the cell. But she also confirms that she's been having what she refers to as aftershock psychic episodes on top of that. So things are happening with Julia. Nobody really knows what's up. This is a pretty unique pregnancy that she's going through, even in the magical world.
For the life of me, I could not remember Lipson's name. I am so ashamed that the scene was going on and I was sitting there just with blank comes to examine the High Kings. I was like, what the fuck is her name? I was freaking out. And then I honestly didn't even think about it until B-Toms thankfully just dropped it right there. I feel like I have to be honest and admit as a rook that
you should be honest.
Her name just would not find its way onto
we'll let it slide because you're a rook. That's all. We'll give you this one for you, B.
Typical rook stuff, man. We've been so good through 11 episodes, and now you're gonna drop us on some weak shit like forgetting Lipson's name.
I'm just trying to call balls and strikes out here.
Isn't Lipson your girl
too? Unforgivable. Give me some waffle
fries
and a diet Dr. Pepper for free.
Unforgivable. Seriously though, Kyle, unforgivable. Lipson, put some respect on her name. But to end this scene, Lipson tells Julia to come to the Break Bill's lab so she can put up like these additional protective wards, you know, check her out, make sure she's okay with the pregnancy after her and Penny air out their laundry. Julia says, I can't do it right now. We're going through it.
I just want to add in too that let's not forget that Julia was a demigod at some point in time. So having this also but she was originally human. So having now an original demigod in her belly that can travel, I feel like definitely is going to cause some issues.
Has anyone had a better story than Julia Wicker?
Honestly,
maybe Alice Quinn.
What about Bran the Broken?
I was just going to say, bro. What do you mean?
That's what I was referring to. Come on now.
I think Julia's up there. I think she honestly is. She has the most character growth out of anybody. Like, she's had her deep lows and now she's on a high.
I was more referring to like most interesting story. Like, who has had the craziest life, honestly? She was a goddess for like a hot minute, then gave it up to make keys that powered magic and had that stolen too. Like, she's been
Hedgewitch the goddess. Not many people can say that.
Raped by a god. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's fucking wild.
I feel like Elliot's had it pretty wild.
That was good.
And that's funny because Julia was the beast too, though. Well, the sister.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Julia probably has had the craziest life, but I don't know about the most character growth, but definitely the craziest life.
Hmm. All right, I'll agree with you on that.
That's a good question. I would like to ask the other three about that. We could do that on the final episode.
I was going to say,
who has had the best story? So bringing us back, we have that Ember dream scene to finish. Ember just reminds us that he is only activated by World War, Pandemic, Revolt of Dwarves, or the Mass Rising of the Dead. Margo's like, we know, we're already on it. He's like, huzzah! He says, on top of being creepy, though, the dead drain life, contaminating everything they touch, like a pickle on a sandwich. And what a metaphor this is.
I like pickles too, Kyle. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, but see, there's a couple kinds of pickles. I don't like sweet pickles. I like salty pickles.
Sweet pickles suck.
Yeah, yes. Agreed.
Salty pickles are amazing. If we can all agree on that.
I think so.
I'm with you. I could agree.
But what a metaphor this was. He's like, here, see this one dead pickle, throws it on like the map or whatever, and then he gets a barrel and just tosses them all on. They were all repulsed by the pickles. They're like, whoa.
I loved the reaction to it.
The thing that I'm laughing the most about is when he's going crazy, the three of them are freaking out, and Margo is just not even reacting except for just giving him the face like, dude, fucking relax. Like, she is not dealing with his shit. She literally doesn't react at all while they're jumping and stuff.
Classic Margo, though. Mm-hmm. She would be the one to play it cool in that situation.
He gives the huzzah, and then he rescinds his huzzah. Why does he do that again? I don't remember.
Because they tell him that Rupert is immortal, like unkillable. Okay, I think they say. He's like, I must rescind it.
I loved that part. I'm gonna start dishing out huzzahs and then rescinding them if something bad happens.
If I ever get a huzzah rescinded by you, I'll feel terrible, man.
Stay on your toes, bro.
Yikes! Yeah, you're the one forgetting Lipson. You think to lecture me on the ways of staying on one's toes?
We'll see.
Anyway, so the pickles are all over the map, and I thought this was weird. Elliot comes out of nowhere and says the only alternative option is blowing up the planet. Like, is that the first time we heard that option?
We talked before about how it was known to certain characters that to kill Rupert, they were going to have to destroy the planet. Now, I don't know.
Yeah.
Elliot was part of that conversation. I don't remember exactly who else was, but yeah, I'm thinking he already has that in the back of his mind from that conversation.
All right. Either way, though, Ember is really keen on doing that. He's like, which isn't a terrible option, blowing up the planet. To which we hear some knocking on the door. And who is it but Ember's brother, Umber? I love seeing this guy again. I'm a fan of Umber, personally. I'm a big Umber guy over Ember.
Oh, 100%. I mean, he was a bitch for a while, but he came to.
So this emanation of Umber was designed to intervene if Ember ever attempted something stupid, such as blowing up Fillory. And he kind of gives this little spiel. As we know, Umber was designing other worlds on Earth after faking his own death. One such design was an Ark, which could potentially serve as a temporary vessel capable of pulling every living Fillorian off of the planet while they are delivered to a new, more perfect world. So Elliot just kind of says out loud, okay, so the plan is now get all the Florians on an arc, pull them to a different world, and blow up Fillory, killing Rupert and the Takers. To which Ember and Umber just start slapping each other for hours. And we just flash back to the apartment with a voiceover of Fen. Like, I think they forgot we were there. They just kept slapping each other.
I love that they made it a point to say hours.
And I think it's actually this part, if I can fast forward myself from when I said it earlier, I think it's this part when they start slapping each other that the three of them are starting to flinch a little bit and say, what the hell are they doing? And Margo's like, oh my God. And then I think it's her voiceover too that they jump to when she's like, I don't know, they kept slapping each other.
Oh, you know what? This brings us, I forgot to mention, the official sci-fi description of the episode was slap fight. Josh eats a pickle. Dreams are weird.
That was the description?
Yes. Slap
That's
fight.
Crazy.
Eats a pickle. Dreams are weird.
That was one scene that described the whole episode.
Yeah.
Is anything else applicable to the dreams are weird part? Probably not.
That's no. Crazy.
Josh is eating that pickle when we get back to the apartment.
Legend.
So that brings us to the squad is back in the New York apartment discussing the Ember vision. And Josh immediately questions, okay, if we have the Ark, like what could this new planet be? Where are we taking them on this Ark? And Alice suggests the world seed from Q's notes, obviously. They can make this new perfect planet for the Fellorians. But she says the bad news is that the couple has the seed. The good news is that we have time. The moon will keep the couple from casting on the seed with the janked up circumstances. And the notes are in a dead language that even Alice couldn't decipher. So maybe they can't even understand it. Thoughts on the plan? World seed? Is that a new potential world for the Fellorians?
Yeah, this makes a lot of sense.
Does this seem endgame to the Rooks?
I would say yes, and especially makes more sense than what we were kind of theorizing about what the world seed would be. I don't know, B-Tums, you mentioned it, who knows how many episodes ago, but just kind of thinking out loud about how all of these storylines can possibly converge into one, because we do know that the season is ending soon. This makes a lot of sense.
Okay, Dave, you're
good. I was going to say, are you guys seeing any flaws with this plan? What's the overarching feelings of this?
I mean, Julia says right away that's insane in a good way. So it is a pretty insane plan. And at face value, you are blowing up a planet to save the planet's citizens. It's
how are you going to convince the citizens to leave?
Well, exactly. And that's kind of the dilemma that they go through this whole episode with Fen, you know, like Fen is representing all of Fillory, but yeah, it's a tough dilemma. I don't know. I think later on when Fen says, if this was Earth, you'd be trying a lot harder. I think that's true, you know, like they went right to this, okay, let's blow up Fillory and get a new planet. Like, that's not very creative, but
that was the quote that spoke to me the most was the one what you just said, where if this was Earth, you guys would try a lot harder, which it's definitely true. You know, obviously being from Earth, they have set priorities. We already saw this earlier in the season when Julia is prioritizing saving the Earth over Fillory, all that stuff, when the pig guy first shows up. So it's just another dilemma.
Pig guy, yeah. Kyle.
Pig
Kyle.
Guy. Sir Hargrave, McGrubney, Cubbins, Archibald, Brian, Effingham III, you mean?
All right. Well, because you can remember that, we'll forget the fact that you forgot Lipson's name.
You trying to say that? I don't have my priorities in order? Because I would challenge that notion.
Yeah, I think, B-Toms, this is overall, I mean, it's the only plan they're given, and it's the only one that makes sense at this point in time. So I think as of right now, I mean, it's tough to make that decision, but as of right now, it's just blow up filler. If you can't kill Rupert, then this is all for naught, you know?
I mean, kill Rupert, they need to blow up Fillory.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So
I personally just like the baton passing from Alice to Julia to try to crack the language code. I just thought that was nice.
Look, you know, I also think in situations like this, all they did was stab Roop. Like, they didn't try beheading him. Nobody ever tries beheading people. I'm watching The Vampire Diaries. How many times they could have killed some of these vampires by beheading them instead of stabbing them? It's insane. Nobody beheads people anymore.
Yeah, I feel like that would be just one thing that you just always go for.
Roop ain't coming back from a beheading. Come on.
You're saying we need more guillotines?
That's exactly what I'm saying. I wasn't going to say it, but now that you're saying it, I'm agreeing with you.
I can get behind that. Is that a new Bingetown merch? We just make guillotines?
Guillotines. I don't know. You're going to have to ask our marketing guys. Jimmy, what you think?
As long as we put Bingetown TV on the guillotine, we're good.
Hell yeah. We get it on the blade, too.
Yeah.
Binge Town TV, taking heads, baby.
Is that our new slogan? Taking heads, baby.
We should start the next pod with that. See how the audience takes it.
We're all taking heads, but B Tom's just sucking them. That's all I know.
What?
The heads of dudes.
There you go.
I wasn't sure if that was explicitly clear or not, but now if I'm just imagining B Tom's just sucking a bald man's head.
We were talking about cutting people's actual heads off. Yeah. You said he's gonna suck them.
True. Yeah. Maybe we should cut that. We'll see.
Bringing us back to the episode, this is where they kind of establish who's going to do what. So Alice is going to work on getting the seed back from the couple, really stealing the seed from the couple. Julia will work on deciphering the notes since it's in the dead language. The rest of our squad will need to travel to grab the Ark from Umber's house in Vancouver, which we have seen before, and they're going to need a traveler. Penny knows a guy, and it's our boy Hyman back from the dead. This was actually a really great scene right when he wakes up and he just breaks down crying, like hugs Penny, says thank you. That was an awesome scene. That's the first time he broke the veil.
Whatever Hyman's actor's name just does a phenomenal job of just letting out those feelings of just being in a stasis for God knows however many years it was, like 80 years or whatever. But shout out to Plum for saving him, technically, I guess. So thank God Plum was around, because otherwise we wouldn't be having this moment right here.
Penny saying "be the Hyman" was something that I never knew I needed in my life. But holy fucking shit, that was so awesome. Like, what a nice full circle on us right there. I mean, Hyman teaching Penny 40 to be the Penny gets us all the way now to here, to Penny 23. Waking Hyman up basically out of stasis 100 or whatever, how many years later, with "be the Hyman."
So good.
Crazy.
That's what the magician does best, is that full circle.
I also was curious if he was going to be like, if he's going to be mad. I don't know if it'll ever come to light that they hid his body, because technically in this timeline now, they're the reason why he was lost on the astral plane for that long, but maybe it won't come up.
Well, we know technically he wants to be back on the astral plane, so...
Yeah, I guess it wasn't that bad for him. He got used to it.
So, in very magician's fashion, we have a sentimental scene followed immediately by a ridiculous scene with Hyman going around literally touching the things that he has been looking at for the past century. He's, like, rubbing the stuffed rabbit, just boinging, you know, a bunch of springs and stuff. And then he does a little spin and pronounces that he loves fingering things. And the look that Julia and Penny have with each other.
They're definitely regretting the decision to unstasis him at this moment. They'll learn to love him again. But right now they're just like, who is this guy?
I know the magicians loves their musical episodes. And when he sat down and cracked his knuckles at the piano, I was like, holy shit, like, is this going to be the music episode? And then he just starts playing horribly. And I was like, oh my God, those motherfuckers.
I laughed out loud at that part. I was cracking up.
My favorite part of the whole thing is definitely him burning himself and just screaming, whore.
Yeah.
And he goes to go back to it. He's like, just kidding.
Yeah.
He's the man.
He is.
If it came down to me having to marry him or bang him, exactly, I would kill him.
I would kill him. I would kill him as well.
I mean, that's exactly what you would do if you spent the last century plus not being able to touch things. You would touch everything in sight for the next, like, 24 hours. I love this scene. I love Hyman. I'm so. If you would have told me, when did we meet him? Like, 2 seasons ago, that he would be hanging around in real life for the final 3 episodes of the series? Come on.
He's one of the boys at this point in time. He's one of the group members at right now. They need him.
Well, see, that's what he's upset about, because now that he's a real person, he's not part of the group. But you're right. They do need him.
He's filling that Penny role as the traveler. And immediately Penny and Julia say, we need help getting to Vancouver, to Umber's place. And he says, hey, I've been following you guys for so long. Whatever you need, I will help. And right, we get this scene where Penny is tattooing him with the cooperative traveling tattoos. And he's recounting the tale to Elliot, saying that he was absolutely stoic and you would never have known that he was in pain.
I think if we did last episode's Bang Kill Mary on this one, I think the outcome would have changed a little bit. Do you guys agree with that? Maybe just a little bit?
No.
No, sticking by it.
No. See, Dave, the thing is, I thought that this episode proved that he isn't good with interaction with people. And if you can't be good with interaction with people in real life, you can't bang me good either. And you're not gonna, and I'm not marrying you either if that's the case.
All right, I already like that logic. I'm sold. Ship it.
Dave, you're right, though. This episode did make me love him even more.
We already loved him enough, and now it's just like we get actual Hyman. We get a real embodiment of Hyman getting to do stuff, so it's always good.
I would say, if nothing else, this episode made it more difficult to kill Hyman.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
That's true. Very true.
So Elliot, in the next scene, gives Hyman Umber's address, and he's kind of being short with Hyman in this scene. Hyman's like, oh yeah, I just got the tattoos. And Elliot's like, whatever, here's the address. Like, be here at 7:30 to like teleport us there. Elliot and Margo were kind of mean in a couple scenes this episode. Rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know. But Hyman looks over and notices Fen kind of like sulking in the kitchen or whatever. And he's like, you know, why are you upset? You're the girl that likes forks. Why are you upset?
Yo, also, Hyman looks fire in this scene. He got some new clothes. He's
bangable.
Now, he's starting to fit in more in 2021.
Is he bangable?
No, but he looks great. He looks really good. And also, B-Tums, clearing up an issue that we had maybe last episode, two episodes ago, that Fen does say that she's Elliot's wife.
Yes.
Yeah. I actually had a split moment where I kind of shipped Hyman and Fen real quick, but then she immediately reminded that she was Elliot's wife. But I'm not sure how much weight that carries. I don't know. If Elliot saw that they were both going to be happy, they're not royalty anymore officially.
And plus, they also have the plan to go to a new world. Do those old laws, you know, hold up in the new world? We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. But essentially, Hyman kind of pushes the issue with Fen's like, no, like, I think you're upset. And here's why. I think you're upset because you know that this plan is zany. And you know, if you speak up, they won't listen. Didn't Elliot say that you were a hayseed from a backwards prolapsed asshole of a planet? And he's like, oh, wait, you might not have been there for that. I might have just been eavesdropping. But he's like, whatever. Outsider to outsider. Doesn't this feel like the part of the story where the good guys are just wrong? And I agree. I'm not sold on this plan to blow up Fillory. Like, they came up with it so easily, and they're just like, okay, now we're blowing up Fillory. Let's do it. Nah, this is where this show started. This is season one. Like, Fillory is where it all began, and they're just, first plan they thought of, they're riding with it, blow it up.
Yeah, Hyman's almost acting as us in this scene, because, I mean, we've been calling for Fen to play a bigger part, for them to stop being mean to her forever. And he finally gets a chance to say it to her face, and I like that he kind of calls her out on it.
Can you guys imagine if Q was still alive and this plan was a thing?
It would never happen.
He would be freaking out. He would not let this happen. So
as soon as those words came out of anyone's mouth, Q would just be like, no fucking shot is that happening. I don't know. His mindset could have changed after everything that had happened. But like at the end of the day, Fillory is something so important to Q. And the fact that like, yeah, I agree. I'm with you, Jimmy. I don't think he would have let that fly.
And speaking of Q, I got to say, earlier in the season, I was fully adamant on I do not want to see Q, Jason Ralph, make a new cameo this season. Now, on episode 11, I can honestly say I'm like, damn, but like, honestly, where is Q? Like, I thought they were going to give it to me and I could pretend to be pissed, but like, where is he? I want him, especially now that the entire end of the season is revolving around the dead being brought back to life. Like, come on, I better see dead Q reanimated or something.
I didn't want
to
mention
die. And yeah. Go to the underworld with him.
That would be a great... What if that was the end of Magicians? Just everyone dies. They all just get reunited in the underworld.
What do you mean, what if?
True. What if?
Put it on the board. It's a new theory.
Everyone's going to fucking die.
That's a theory from the vet.
And then everyone's going to die. Todd's going to stay. He's going to be the king of himself. He's the only one left. He's the Dark King Todd.
I will huzzah till the cows come home to that.
This is where we get Hyman teleports Elliot, Margo, Fen, and Josh to Umber's place in Vancouver. And this is where we're going to start breaking up our storyline. So we're going to follow this squad of Elliot, Margo, Fen, and Josh. And they walk up to Umber's place. Well, first off, Hyman travels them there. And then they're just like, all right, boss, we'll call you when we're ready to go home. And they just kind of let him do his thing. And they walk up to the house. And it's this Umber ghost butler is at the doorway, and he just keeps saying the master of the house isn't available. But this ghost butler of Umber starts to tell this story of what we find out to be Falorian scripture describing the birth of Ember and Umber, about a tigress who walks upon a lonely beach, and he kind of starts this story, and Fen finishes it to solve the riddle to get past this ghost butler of Umber. After Fen solves the riddle, you know, the ghost butler lets them in, and nobody else is impressed. Like, Fen just steps up, solves a riddle, and they're like, okay, whatever, let's go.
Yeah, no credit to Fen for being able to solve this puzzle that none of them could have solved.
The disrespect to Fen has always been ridiculous, but I think you guys as rooks can tell that Fen's going to start turning this shit around starting this episode for the next two.
And she's nice to Hyman, too. They're all like, all right, fuck off, buddy. And she kind of gives him a little wave goodbye. And I was like, oh, thanks for doing that, Fen.
She's the best. She deserves everything she ever wanted. And by the way, how are they going to call Hyman? Has he used a phone before?
Yeah, true. He definitely doesn't have anything. I don't know why they didn't just include him. He could have easily been in the house with them.
He can travel back to the physical cottage. I don't know. Yeah, they were purposefully being mean to him.
Yeah.
But like Penny says, at best case scenario, you're a taxi driver for your friends. And that's what Hyman is at this point in time. They don't see the respect that we see for Hyman.
So the next scene that we get is with them in Vancouver, and they're kind of just walking through the living room of the house. Remember, Elliot has been here before with Quentin a couple seasons ago, and none of Umper's old pocket worlds are lying around. He used to have shelves lined with these snow globe looking things that were pocket worlds. And Fen sees a picture on a wall of Hills that she recognized and used to play. What was it? Queen of the Mound or Queen of the Hump? As a kid. And Margo's like, if it doesn't have to do with the arc, I don't fucking care, Fen. Or I don't give a shit, Fen. Like, so rude. I feel bad for not being more upset at it before this episode. Because, like, it was all happening off screen. How could I have known?
And if anything, we've learned that when Fen has those, like, space out kind of moments of remembrance, they actually end up being important. I feel like our characters should know that by now. Like, this could have some role to play in the future, you know? So they just shut it down.
It is weird that Margo is still so mean to her, because of all the things that we talked about for her character growth, this is one thing that's not changed, and it is definitely weird that it hasn't changed.
Do you think it's because of Josh still? Like, do you think she just still can't get over that? Like,
I just think they have a stigma against Fen, all of them, and they just think she's, like, whether you want to say annoying or not important, I just think most of them have it, and you know Margo's personality, so...
Nice girls and guys always finish last, I guess.
I mean, but we know, like, at the same time, deep down, Margo cares about Fen, you know, but it's...
That said, earlier this season, Margo and Fen did have, like, a little one-on-one personal spat when it was revealed that Fen and Josh fucked, and then they fought mano-e-mano, but I thought they kind of got over that. I don't know. Yeah. It's weird. The disrespect is real, and they've been treating her like a second-class citizen for... far too long, in my opinion.
You just took the words right out of my mouth. Far too long. Justice for High King Fen the Toeless.
Oh, huzzah!
Umber's ghost comes by, and they're like, yeah, what happened to all the pocket worlds that used to be here? And the ghost presents them with these 10 snow globes. They say, we were sent by the eminence of you. Like, show us where they are. So he gives them 10 snow globe options, only one of which is the true arc. And if you choose poorly... Josh finishes the sentence, oh, we all age really fast and turn to dust, just like in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. He's like, exactly, but due to copyright laws, like, it'll be slightly more explosive. We don't know what's going to happen. So Margo gives the filler expert Fen the right to choose, and then after literally 5 seconds of her observing these snow globes, she's like, any day now? Fuck off, Margo. Come on.
Literally, when you just were told that it's going to be an explosive conclusion if you get it wrong, and they're giving her shit for taking more than 5 seconds to think about it.
I feel like it's so interesting because Margot's kind of a big part of her character was that she'll do anything for Fillory. You know, she'll put Fillory before herself. She was willing to basically give Josh up for Fillory. And now she's acting like this. She's just out of pocket.
That was a huge part of her character growth, the protection, the love, whatever you want to say, for Fillory.
And now it's all gone.
She pushed Fen a little too far.
I mean, again, you know, if she believes that the people of Fillory are what needs to be saved, then, if you know, that's why she's okay with destroying the planet, maybe, if she's saving her people. but still.
Yeah, so Fen rightfully storms out and says, you can solve this on your own. So she goes to be by herself, drops a mic. Yeah.
Hell yeah. And
the next scene we get is Elliot. It went from daylight to dark outside, so it's been a while of them probably trying to figure it out without Fen's help. And Elliot just comes in and apologizes to Fen for treating her like the friend that only gets invited to trivia night. To which she responds, you know I don't know what that means. So that's kind of like a perfect example of how she's always kind of out of the loop and always just like not as close as everybody else here. This is a great scene though between Elliot and Fen.
Oh, I just, it's also, it's both perfect and makes me a little sad, kind of piggybacking a little bit on what B-Toms was saying earlier, in that like we love those jokes where like at Fen's expense, where she's kind of immersed in this culture that she has knows nothing about. I mean, I'll bring it up maybe third or fourth time this season with the Benihana, but you know, it does in this scene, it kind of really hits you of like, wow, you know, that contributes a lot to why she feels the way she does. And we've kind of just been laughing at it.
And at this point, Elliot just says, hey, look, I am begging you for help. Margo's starting to freak out. Josh is holding her at bay for now, but like, we need your help. We can't do this without you. And this is where we get the Fen quote. If this was Earth, you would try a lot harder to find another way. So maybe it's my job to represent Fillory. And she says, if you're asking for my permission, like I can't give you my permission to destroy Fillory. Like I will not give you permission to do that. And he says, look, if you have any other options, like we'd love to hear them, but
time is running out, essentially.
Yeah. It's an impossible situation. We get this scene where the prayer note falls and she says, you know, I'm sure you think it's stupid, but that the Fillorians are still praying even to a dead god. And Elliot says, it's taken me a long time to figure out that you can still love something even after it's gone. And that's like, shout out Q. Come on.
He's cutting onions, dude.
Dear enough, who's doing it? Get him out of here. And Elliot says, I love this quote too. You want to stop being treated like a sidekick. You want to have a say. This is what that feels like. I'm not asking for your permission. Some part of Fillory has to die and you have to choose. Is it going to be the rocks and the dirt or the people and the traditions that you can bring with you?
I'll huzzah to that, baby. That was great. I love that.
Elliot's just the man, dude. I fucking love Elliot to death. I will do anything for Elliot. And the fact that he is he's just always going to be that guy to comfort you, you know, and he's always usually the one needing comfort the most, but he is always willing to dish it out to whoever.
This is also pretty much exactly what we have been, or at least me personally, have been calling for. I mean, I feel like I've kind of been almost a broken record of saying I want Fen to have a bigger role. And I just love that. I feel like obviously the writers know that and probably know that people want that. And them taking not the opposite stance, but showing what that really means for her to have a bigger role is making these tough decisions that, you know, everyone else on the crew has been making for 5 seasons straight. I mean, they have made some unbelievably tough decisions over the years. Yeah. So I just like the way that that's how Elliot put it to her.
I also love the relationship between Elliot and Fen. Like, he has always been a little bit more, I don't know, patient and compassionate with regards to her general Fen-ness, if you will. Like, such a great duo, and this was a really heartfelt scene. I love that they had this chance to talk, but it is cut short by an explosion, followed by Margo saying, I got it. I don't got it. And Fen rushes out to the living room, and as these snow globes are exploding one by one, Fen rushes in and saves the one with a seahorse in it.
Yeah, I would actually want to ask, do you guys have any thoughts on the snow globe that she had chosen, like anything?
Well, I mean, they give us why she chose that one. It was a cool story. She knew that it was a seahorse one because that's how Ember and Umber first brought the people of Fillory to Fillory.
What a great
in the patch of a seahorse.
This is so funny. Just a giant seahorse just bringing all these citizens to this world.
Bro, that's a way better story than Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was ridiculous, but it was so Fillory. And they looked at it like, what are you smoking? But it's like,
it's Fillory,
is our story
baby.
Any less ridiculous? I don't know. It's,
yeah, we're fucking we're magicians. Like, people can fucking teleport. Why can't people just travel using a seahorse, you know?
And also, I mean, this kind of keeps their tradition alive. I mean, technically, if they do blow Fillory and go to a new planet, their origins will be the same as when they lived on Fillory. I mean,
great
they
point.
Traveled in the pouch of a seahorse to go to the new world. I just love the Fen quote, just the excitement in her voice when she realizes that she got it right. And she says, I did it. I chose wisely. I'm wise. She's the fucking best. I was literally so happy that this happened.
Is this the moment?
This is, I'm fighting to decide whether I would rather have had her stab Seb or Roop rather, or do this, but this is better, but I really wanted her to stab Roop.
That would be awesome. But does Fen become, go from being Fen the Toeless to Fen the Wise now?
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. All right.
Well, it's Alice the Wise, isn't it? Isn't Alice also the Wise? I was just going to
ask what Alice's is.
I'm pretty sure she's Alice the Wise. Yeah, but that's all right. She's not a queen. She's not a king anymore. Alice isn't a king anymore. She died.
The Wise the Second.
Nah. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Too many people that are wise.
Yeah, that's a good problem.
Nah, I kind of like Fen the Toeless. That's her thing. And she ain't getting those toes back.
That is her thing. Is that all of it for that group right there?
That is all of it for that group. Yeah.
What if they used the world seed to just create toes for Fen and that was the end of the series?
Satisfying. Honestly.
We finally give the respect to Fen.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, she doesn't have to do with the fucking toe worms anymore.
Yeah. It's got to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. She's not no longer, she's no longer at risk of Josh discriminating against her. So.
And honestly, to close out that storyline, I'll just say it seems like Fen is starting to get in the driver's seat and getting a little upgrade from that sidekick status. So it seems like she's getting a little bit more clout within the group. And I'm excited for that. Even though we're on episode 11 here. So maybe she'll have a big role in the next two episodes as the resident Falurian. That will bring us back to kind of the beginning-ish of the episode. And we're going to start going through the Alice and Katie storyline. And their first scene together is in the New York City apartment. And they're talking to Pete, love lady, about where they can locate the couple. And it's a real quick scene. He's like, hey, everybody thinks they're a myth. Even I think they're just like a myth, a joke. The only other person I know that believes in them is Marina.
Yeah.
Love
whenever
that.
We see Pete, that fucker's always talking about Marina.
By the way, I just want to bring up, shout out to Kathleen. I don't know what it is. Now that she said the wig thing, I can't not look at Alice's wig. It's still...
It's funny that you mentioned that because I still can't see it.
Really, seems so blatant to me now.
I don't notice it at all.
Wow.
I also don't look for it, but like, yeah.
What are you
I
looking haven't. At? Are you not looking at her hair, Kyle?
Yeah, hell no.
What else does she have to offer, huh?
She got a couple huzzas.
That was the perfect response.
A couple huzzas.
So that's a quick one with Pete, and Pete, he essentially says, go to Marina. She'll have answers about the couple, which brings Alice and Katie to go see Marina, who immediately, upon opening the door, says, oh, Katie, like, I'm so sorry for everything I've ever done to you. Like, come in, let's have cookies. And they're just like, who the fuck is this? Like, what's going on here? And we have a nice Marina. And this was a trip, honestly, as a rook.
I really like when Alice curses.
What does she say? What does she actually say? What the fuck or something? Or
yeah, she said, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of
just
hot.
Sounds so. It's so like it just means more almost when she says it. You know that she really fucking means it.
Let me ask the Rooks. How do you guys feel about Marina with the blonde hair?
I liked her early seasons, long kind of reddish hair, strawberry hair. I don't know. It was a great look for her.
Yeah,
that looks never going out of style.
The old Marina look just always did it for me.
I agree.
Yeah, it's just. It's not that I don't like short hair. I just think it's a little short for me and just on her. I don't think that hairstyle necessarily automatically makes you unattractive, but I just don't think it's great for her.
My take on the short hair thing is always like, I'm not saying you're unattractive because you have short hair. I just think that you'll always look better with a little bit longer hair.
That's a classic Luke take.
I was literally just going to say that is a classic ass Luke take.
Oh, is that
right
what
there.
He says?
Dude, yeah. He always says that. That's funny. Continue us, B Toms.
Yeah, Bingetown beauty advice coming to a podcast near you sometime soon.
We're starting our own beauty line. We're starting our own
guillotines, baby.
Guillotine line.
I'll get you some mock-ups, some sketch-ups by the end of the night, right?
All right. I'm going to start a wig line if you have short hair.
You have the eye for it.
Yeah. I noticed Alice's wig. Yeah, I'm going to get a better one made for her.
You're gonna call her up and reshoot all of the scenes.
Yeah. Well, it'll be the director's cut, man.
The Jimmy director's cut.
Yeah. The Jimmy Town cut, baby.
Yeah, baby.
We Between Jimmy and Kathleen, we will be the best company at being able to point out people who are wearing wigs. Yeah. That guy's wearing a wig.
Fake.
I'm gonna call up HBO Max, see if they'll let me do the Jimmy cut of Magician Season 5 instead of the Snyder cut.
I'd green light it.
So, as we continue, they go into Marina's house, and we find out that the reason she's being nice is because she went to a trance healer who put a block on all the parts of her personality that made her, quote, aggressive, but ultimately self-destructive. She just acknowledges that she was a horrible person and said, yeah, I needed a psychic person to just block all the negative stuff going through me. So she is physically incapable of making bad decisions.
Don't we all need a little psychic like that in our lives?
If only. It couldn't hurt, you know? Yeah. Maybe not that extreme, though.
Yeah, not that extreme, exactly.
So after Marina tells us why she's acting so nice, Alice says that they're looking for the couple, and immediately Marina kind of clams up, and it's just like, ooh, I don't know anything about that. They press her some more. She said, okay, seeking out the couple would be what I like to call an old Marina decision. She's like, new Marina doesn't do stuff like that. And we find out that during the harmonic convergence, Marina was actually already trying to steal the world seed from the couple. And she alludes to things kind of going horribly wrong. But they keep pressing her on this. And she tells Alice that they're hiding the world seed in a hotel called The Nave, which was kind of giving me John Wick vibes with the Continental. It's like only magicians can come and go from it. It's like completely secretive. And it has a vault that is known as like the most secure place on the planet. So it's not going to be easy to steal the world seed from the couple. Marina says that her and her partner spent months plotting every inch of the hotel, and they put it all in a heist book, and she knows someone who might know where it is, which gives us a cut to them visiting our old friend Gavin, who was in a full body cast, like something out of SpongeBob with the dude with paper skin and glass bones.
Dude, that's the result of me banging. I mentioned that bang Kill Mary a couple episodes ago.
Ew. Did we all bang Gavin? That was just back-to-back-to-back banging. That'll put him in a body bag.
He couldn't handle the back-to-back sessions.
So we find out that Marina hired Gavin and a couple other people for the heist, but it turned into essentially a suicide mission without the harmonic convergence going according to plan. It's alluded to they were going to harness that power to help them with the heist, but Marina knowingly sent them in to die, essentially. So Gavin says that he's going to refuse to help them locate the book because he does not want to help Marina in any way, shape, or form.
Could you imagine just seeing this dude in a full body cast, knowing what he did to get into that full body cast, and then know that you're about to do the same exact thing? Like, they're wild. I don't know. That's just my opinion on that. I would just be terrified. It's like, how is this going to end poorly for us?
Alice and Katie are fearless.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, they're on a mission. Yeah.
I guess it's die or be put in a, it's either die or be put in a full body cast, one or the other.
Yeah. So Gavin just isn't going to help them. And Katie and Alice have a sidebar with Marina outside of the room where they're like, how did you get him to work with you before? And she says she has leverage, but she won't use it now because that would be deeply unethical. So she leaves to get Gavin a smoothie instead. And Katie and Alice come to the conclusion that, well, if we don't have Marina, one of us or both of us is going to have to be Marina. So they go back into the room and kind of blackmail him by saying, if you don't tell us where to find this heist book, we're going to take down all your mental wards, so that you're going to have to lay there every single day and listen to everybody's thoughts in a monologue without being able to stop it. And that would be torture, especially for a guy like Gavin who hates everybody and everything. So they start doing it, and he agrees to tell them where they can find the heist book. And it's with this chick, Anna, who was, I guess, a part of the heist. We find out what her role is later. She's Marina's ex-girlfriend, but good play by them. They came up with that really quick just to take down his mental wards. That was, didn't stand a chance.
Bro, look who you're talking about, though.
Gavin?
Alice and Katie. No, yeah, Alice true. And Katie, bro. They're going to get it done no matter what.
How hilarious was it to hear Marina say that's deeply unethical?
It just makes you feel weird.
Yep.
Yeah, it's unnatural. the actress was money this episode acting it. It's a completely different character. And she was like so doe-eyed the entire thing, like didn't have a clue, like was just so ditzy. Which will bring us to Marina, Alice, and Katie going to see this chick, Anna, for the heist book. And we find out that she is Marina's ex-girlfriend. So Anna is pissed that Marina had just like kept lying and lying and lying to her about everything, which obviously Marina would used to do. And Marina's trying to apologize. Alice and Katie just say, hey, if you give us the book, like we will leave you and Marina alone completely. And Marina says, honestly, I can't lie. Like, I'm going to have to be a part of this if you guys want to succeed. Like, you're going to need my help. And then she goes away with Anna, and Alice is just like, I'm taking off her fucking mental wards. We need the mean Marina back. And it's about time. Like, come on. This person was useless, this blonde Marina.
Blonde Marina was useless, but I will say, am I feeling a little bit of sympathy and sadness for Marina, who just wants to have a penny lifestyle, you know, just be normal?
I don't have any sympathy for that biatch. She's caused too many problems for them, man. You know that if the roles were reversed, she'd jump right back into taking their wards off and screwing their lives up too. So I don't have any sympathy for Marina on that front. And also, does she actually ever say what made her decide to go to the person to put the wards up?
She mentions a list that Anna, I don't know if she gave her a physical list, but I'm sure, you know, in them splitting up, Anna listed out all these things that, you know, are problems with Marina, and Marina might have taken as like almost like a to-do list that she needed to get done in order to have a chance to get back with her.
I feel like in the Gavin scene, Katie and Alice talked about like, that's why you had these spells put up. It's because you sent these people on the suicide mission. So I think that's what they decided was the final straw, but I'm not sure.
No, I think that makes sense.
Cool. So anyway, Alice has the wherewithal. Our girl Alice, just smart as can be. Alice the Wise gets her to sign a word as bond spell before turning her back to evil Marina, essentially just saying, we have it in blood that you're going to help us acquire this heist book. And then once we go through with the heist, you're not going to fuck us over. So they get her to agree to the word as bond while she's good Marina. And then they take down the wards and make her bad Marina, which will take us to, I believe, our final scene with these three, Alice, Katie, and Marina. And it's, this is a pretty funny scene. It's Alice and Katie watching as this new evil Marina, now the spells have been removed, is lying to Anna about not being involved with the heist. Alice is just like, watching her do this just makes me feel horrible as a human being.
That's what I was saying.
Only because you feel bad for Anna, because now she's just being drawn back into Marina's usual BS, but they're having their wrists twisted on this one. So Anna grabs them the heist book, and Marina is still playing the part, says, we have a lot of work to do on us now that I'm better. And she gives this little devilish wink to Katie, like, yeah, fuck this bitch. I'm gonna keep screwing her over.
I'm thinking I'm back. There's our second John Wick reference for you, Dave.
Usually you got to pay extra for another John Wick reference, but two in one episode.
If you want to hit up our Patreon, we'll have a third reference to John Wick on that.
So Alice and Katie leave, and that is the conclusion of their story, I believe. Not much to dissect there. They just kind of got the heist book, and Marina is back on the squad. I feel like it's still up to Alice and Katie to steal the seed. So I feel like next episode is probably going to be a huge episode for this trio going in and stealing the seed. And my gosh, I actually really like this squad now that it's usual Marina, Alice, and Katie. Woo.
Yeah, they've really been hyping up the difficulty of what lies ahead of them. And I don't think that the magicians will disappoint in that department.
And we know all heist episodes are bangers.
Do we think these are the three strongest magicians right now?
In the inner circle? Because like,
yeah, we have
Fog
like
is stronger. Like Zelda. The couple is probably stronger. Zelda is stronger. But in...
You don't think Alice is like past Zelda at least?
Nah.
Especially not now that she had her fingers chopped off.
True,
Magic
that's a good
point. Such a weird point because nobody can cast at this point in time. But even if all things being equal, I think Zelda is superior to Atlas.
So Zelda, Dean Fogg, obviously Mayakovsky.
Well, if we're going to talk the group, I think that Katie's probably the best at battle magic. Alice is probably the strongest. And we already know Marina is strong as shit. So they are probably the three strongest. I mean, Julie is not a demigod anymore. So,
and she's pregnant. So
we got our badass bitches, baby. The Babs.
I'm going to go on the record and say Alice is a better magician than Zelda.
Dude, Zelda's girl.
I think she... That's why I brought it up, because I think it's a bigger discussion. We don't have to talk about it right now, but I just think I just wanted to shed some light on that. I think it's a good conversation starter.
I think Alice has the more raw potential, and I think Zelda's a master magician at this point, and it would be better at this point.
Like, I think Alice could become Zelda if she,
A million, I would say. Like, Alice has
Okay, I'm glad you said that. Yeah, I agree.
Zelda's also been around a long time. Like, she hasn't aged, so we don't know how old she is. She had Harriet, and she's only been alive, but she hasn't aged since then, so we don't know how long she's been around. Also, yeah, Jimmy, I think it's the title for me. Like, Zelda is defined as a master magician.
Mm-hmm.
If Alice was that, that would be a thing. She would also be a master magician, but she's not there yet.
I disagree with that completely. I don't think that. Just because Alice doesn't have the title Master Magician. I mean, Alice was a fucking Niffin forever. Like, she is definitely worthy of the title Master Magician. I mean, do we even know what the process is of getting that title?
Yeah, I don't know if it necessarily, if we're saying it by title, it's just like the respect that by the title. I mean,
Alice is better.
And I think even when Alice is dead or like a Niffin, there are still points where they're just like, we need Alice, you know, like who else are you going to call but Alice? So
yeah, you probably call Zelda.
I would call Zelda.
Fuck Zelda.
You won't, because she's not an MC.
Me and Kyle are too. Me and Kyle.
I don't know. Yeah, that's
no.
That's
I just wanted to bring that up.
Listen, we should definitely have this conversation when we get this. I'm sure we'll have the seven of us on for another big pod at the end of episode.
Ooh, a magician's who's the strongest bracket.
Oh yeah,
that wouldn't be too bad. Get us back in our magician's feel. All right,
So Marina, Alice, and Katie, they're going to be still in this world seed, hopefully next episode or the one after that, and that will bring us kind of back towards the beginning to see what Julia and Penny are up to. And the first scene that they have together is Julia is in the physical cottage. That's kind of their setting for the majority of this episode, but Julia is working on deciphering the world seed note page that Q had, and Penny kind of walks in on her in the middle of one of her psychic episodes, and Penny is kind of rattled by this, and Julia is downplaying it, saying like, I'm fine, but Penny's clearly concerned about it. So he goes to ask Hyman, just ask him questions about his mom and what it was like growing up with her. Like, did she have any similar episodes like that? And he was just like, honestly, she was pretty normal. After the lobotomy, she mostly just sat on the porch and sucked at bits of hay. So like, that was not the reassuring answer he was hoping for. So like, Penny just says that he needs Hyman's help with something. Is this a scene where Hyman was making that giant sandwich too?
Yes. It is a crime that he didn't even get to take a bite of it.
Yeah, he should have. The first thing he should have did is went to Josh and said, listen, I haven't eaten in 100 years. Give me something phenomenal. What do you do? Go.
That's so true. Pierogi tacos.
I do. Why does Julia not want to accept treatment? Like, does she feel rushed or something?
She explains it later, right, Tags?
I think it's the general theme is she doesn't want to get put in a box. Like, she thinks that Penny is being too controlling, and I think she's just kind of doing it to spite her. And there's been a general theme of her thinking that she's losing control of all of the decisions she can make and losing control of her body because of the baby. So I think she's just resisting that kind of natural feeling when she really should be taking care of herself.
But we're all in agreement. Penny's making a smart move here, wanting her to go to Lisa.
Oh, for sure. She's also went from not pregnant to 9 months pregnant in the matter of like 2 weeks. So she's probably, she's not in a great mental spot right now.
Okay.
On top of the psychic episodes she's been having. So I think she's not making the best decisions at this point in time.
Okay. Yeah. And she pretty much explains it to Penny when he apologized. And then she says, no, I have to apologize at the end of the episode. So, true. Yeah.
So the next scene is a quick one. Back in the physical cottage, Penny walks in to Julia again, and he's holding the circumstance panel, and he kind of he says his main purpose is to hide it from the couple, but like, he's like, and hey, oh my gosh, here's an idea. Like, just while we're hiding it from the couple, why don't we have Lipson come in and like put up your pregnancy ward so that you're safe? And this is where Julia starts to get upset and says that Penny is like trying to trap her here. And that's not what he's doing. He's just looking out for Julia. Yeah, exactly what you say, Dave. I think we're all in agreement that Penny's making the right call here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially when so the revelation of Penny later on in the episode makes it all make sense too. This was a good episode for Penny, and how like the character that we don't get his backstory until the third to last episode of the series. Because he is so reserved and withholding.
I'd be curious to know if Luke hated on Penny this episode. There's just no way.
Probably did.
Yes, just in some way.
Well, yeah, I mean,
he hates 40. Yeah,
he hates 40. I was going to say, yeah, he likes 23, so.
But at this scene, Hyman is eavesdropping on them as if he was an astral projection, but they just turn around and are just like, Hyman, you literally cannot do this anymore. And Julia hits him with you really need to learn your boundaries. So do you, Penny. And she's out. That was a great one-liner.
I was dying when Penny does his little clap back at Julia and Hyman's like, oh, in the background. Oh, shit.
And then that would definitely take getting used to.
Yeah, it's like, we can hear you, bro. We're having a throwdown over here on the Iceland chat too.
We're holding two different conversations. Yeah.
I asked the group who's better, Alice or Zelda, and Kyle instantly answered Alice. Kathleen says Alice.
Yeah, Alice, baby.
Kathleen says if Alice wasn't ever a Niffin, she would say Zelda, but. I'm fine with that answer. I mean, it's, yeah. You know, they're both.
Yeah,
our girls.
Yeah, I think that's a good answer.
But I mean, I can't believe you didn't have Zelda's back, Kyle. I mean, she's not banging you now.
It's different than me putting her on her back.
Oh.
And me trusting her to do some magic for me. Yeah, let me get a huzzah in the chat.
So, okay, bringing us back. Next thing we have is Penny walking in on Hyman trying to put himself back into stasis. He's shoving himself back into the bench. And this is where we get Hyman starting to voice his complaints just generally about being alive and having to deal with a physical body. And he takes it a step further and he misses when he used to be a part of everything. And now he just feels like a minor character in his own story. Like when he was astral projecting, he was kind of the overseer of everything. Like he kind of has a point. He could just be a fly on the wall and observe everything for infinity. And that was kind of his bag. And he's missing it right now, which if you're used to that over the course of a century, he's a perv, but he wasn't hurting anybody. He was just a perv on the astral plane. And yeah, he was.
Can you imagine how boring he must or how bored he must be now that he just got to sit with his own thoughts? Poop all the time.
That was so funny. And like Penny's like, well, that's not really my experience, yeah. But.
I like, though, that you brought up. He makes some good points, B. Toms, like you said. I mean, on paper, you think, okay, would you rather be an actual person or be able to watch everything for infinity the rest of your life without interacting with anyone? You'd obviously take being... Well, for me, it's I feel like I'd rather obviously live a life than just watch other people live lives. But Hyman makes a great point for wanting to just be the overseer of everything, like you said. So,
full disclosure, I totally thought you were going to say you'd rather be on the astral plane.
No, fuck that. I mean, it would be great for a little bit, but for all of eternity, no way. All eternity, no way.
But yeah, we also get the background that, you know, nobody wanted to talk to Hyman when he was alive, so he was a loner, and that's what, you know, led him to be a perv in the first place and have people hide his body. So we're just peeling back the layers to our boy Hyman now that he's alive and in an actual body. And Penny gives him the advice just to put himself out there and be honest with people. And it may take a minute, but you'll find someone that can stand you. And Hyman's like, hey, man, is this the part where you tell me advice that's really applicable to yourself? And he's like, ah, shit, I got to go find Julia.
Mm-hmm. That was awesome. Because at first I was like, I guess you're really not supposed to know in the moment, but I was like, what is he even talking about here? And then the payoff for it is beautiful, which we'll get to. But before we get there, I just want to give a shout out to the line where Hyman says to Penny, I shipped you before you shipped yourselves.
Yeah.
That's just so funny. Yeah. That's just so, like, I just am thinking of my immediate thought goes to the 100 fandom because of, you know, how often you see people shipping in that fandom, but just how good it would feel to be like a viewer of a show and then be the person that gets two people that you want together and then get to say to them, like, I fucking shipped you guys before you shipped yourselves. Like, I'm a day one OG. How dare you speak back to me?
And that brings us to our next scene. Is just going to be Julia walking through the Break Bill's halls. And as she's passing the lab, she hears something and she walks in to find our friend Sir Effingham rifling through a trash can, and he has been looking for Julia because it turns out that Todd may not have been the intrepid hero he once thought him to be. So he is once again asking Julia for help.
Kyle, what are your thoughts, man? Todd got shut down.
Listen, you can only juggle so many balls in your life. You know, Todd is handsome. He's charismatic. He's got good jokes. He's reliable. You can't be everything. So he's not a hero. That's okay.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you guys, Kyle's like, shit, are we going to see Todd at all for the rest of the series?
Yeah, that's a great question.
I mean, if we don't see him, that's basically them just ripping out my heart and stomping on it.
What was the last, when did we see him last?
Wasn't it him telling Julia about Sir Effingham? That was literally the last time.
No, we see him. He basically tells them about Fog 17.
Oh, right. When he's like, that's evil fog or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
and then he doesn't follow them to the greenhouse to see out the plan. He's just not there.
I hate to say it, Kyle.
He's busy doing Dark King things.
I hate to say it. But Todd doesn't really have a purpose going forward at this point in time. I just don't see it. Like, what's he needed for?
Do you hate laughing?
We already have so much comedic relief with like Ben and Josh. Like, do we need another one?
Damn, hate Dave. Laughing.
No, I'm
you
just,
are
I'm
the
just...
president of the Todd Hate Club.
No, I don't want to.
Oh my god,
fuck! I don't want to.
I just
like
asked
that.
An innocent
my arch
question.
Nemesis has revealed himself finally after 24 years. I have finally met you.
Dave will be the first victim of the Binstown TV guillotine.
Yes. Huzzah to that. Huzzah to the chat.
It was just a neutral question. I don't know.
You put a little bias into that, bro.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I would apologize to Todd. I'm sorry, Todd.
So Sir Effingham continues to tell Julia that his prophecy has become clearer and that he now sees that the bringers of Fillory's demise have been there many times before, and they enter through a tree and they plan to thieve away every soul in the land before destroying the planet outright. And if you're following along at home, this is sounding a whole lot like our hero's plan. And Julia's smart. She's like, how exactly do they blow up the planet? And he says they will turn back the clock on Fillory, resulting in ruin. And I like that she asked that, because I don't think they had figured out how they were going to physically blow up the planet of Fillory. Mm-hmm. So she just got the answer there. Love that. And then Julia asks whether the people will succeed or not, stealing the Fillorians and bringing them to a new world. And this is where Sir F catches her, because he made no mention of any new world. So our heroes are the people that are prophesized to bring Fillory's apocalypse.
I was just going to say, technically, it's not them, really. Like, it's all the takers and everything. They're just, they have to push it a little further. They just have to take care of everyone.
But it sounds like they are the demise that the pig man has been prophesizing specifically.
Yeah. No, it was a great moment to rewatch, of course. Just getting that realization. It's like, okay, like, you are the ones that are forsaken to do this, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I think we've already talked about this enough. I'm not crazy about the plan. I hope they find another way to do it.
I don't know, though.
They always come up with some whack-ass shit, but this time, I guess, there is no door B. There's always a door B in the Magicians. This time, it seems like door A is blow up Fillory, and that's the only door they have. So,
because they don't know anyone. They don't have anyone.
Top of my head, like, I don't know what like the capabilities of the World Seed are, but the only other alternative would be like them making a world for Roop where him and Lance could live together. Because if the Dark King leaves, then Fillory's chilling. But
honestly,
I like that just seems almost more far-fetched than them blowing up Fillory.
Guillotine sounding pretty good right about now.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Dig a really, really deep hole and throw him in the hole and then bury him.
Yeah, I mean, how would that not work?
How does he get out?
He could have some Uma Thurman, the bride type shit, Kill Bill, punch his way through, but not
pour concrete on it.
Probably. There it is. Yeah.
Damn, bro. You don't want to be on Jimmy's bad side, bro. He's going to bury you in a deep hole and pour concrete in it.
That's the double tap. That's the burying someone alive version of a double tap. You bury them, then put cement.
Guillotine, bury them, concrete, we're good.
Oh, my God.
Separate holes, too. Separate holes. Body in one hole, head in another hole.
Exactly. We're done. We don't have to blow a fillery.
They're thinking way too hard about this. Guillotine, bury them in separate graves, cement on top, boom. Come on.
Yep, that's it.
I just want to shout out the GOAT, Sir Effingham III. Obviously a member of Team Kyle, has been since the beginning. Just absolutely killing it this scene. Just, you know, the whole misogyny aspect is just hilarious to me because I'm a man, not because I'm a misogynist. And when he's like, notices that she's pregnant and it's like, oh, like you misplaced your wedding band. Oh, you're widowed. She's like, no, he goes, oh. So it's a bastard. This is like so fucking funny to me. But also he switches the script a little bit at the end when he gets more serious. And he says, the death of Fillory cannot come without a cost. Those that would destroy her will lose the ones they love. And it's like, damn.
Yeah. Dig a hole.
Yeah. Put him in the fucking hole too. Nah, that's my boy. Don't you fucking
I was literally just going to say, that's your boy. You're about to.
Yeah. Willpower alum.
So Penny finds Julia in the Break Bill's lab, and Julia tells him that she saw the pig man again, Sir F, and she's just like, hey, we are the ones. Turns out we are the ones that are causing this apocalypse. He's just bringing Penny up to speed. And then Julia starts to continue to vent about just having lost control of her life due to the pregnancy. She feels like she's just a walking incubator. And this is where Penny opens up, and we get the Penny backstory, and I'm going to go down the rabbit hole. His mom started having episodes and hearing stuff that wasn't there when he was really young. The doctor said it was just stress from their father walking out on them, but Penny believes that it was because of, you know, him, his human mother being pregnant with a hybrid traveler baby. And he says that what's happening to Julia looks exactly like what happened to his mother. He got thrown from foster care after his mom burned down their apartment. He was more scared of his mom, though, than foster care. So this is the Penny backstory. Honestly, I've been interested because we know everybody's magic comes from pain. It is known. We did not know what Penny's pain was that gave him magic. Now we know.
And that just emphasizes more on the Beast control on him. Just basically saying what I'm trying to say is that he had that friend. He had that one voice in his head that was always listening to him. He obviously, his mom wasn't able to hear him out. His father was non-existent. So that's why he was able to put so much trust into this voice in his head. So it's kind of cool seeing that full circle from season one come into now on the loneliness of Penny, I guess.
Yeah. So the conclusion of this scene is Julia. They're both teary-eyed. Julia agrees, like, oh my gosh, yeah, I don't want this to happen to me. Like, we have magic now. We can prevent this. She agrees to do lips and scans or whatever. And Penny agrees not to put her in a cage and let her have control of her own life.
This is kind of the first time for me personally that I'm really vibing with the whole Jenny 23. I mean, it seems like a relationship they kind of just threw at us in, what is it, season 3 or 4? We've kind of all shared the opinion that it's feels like kind of random. And we talked about it. I mean, I brought this point up. We found out that Julie was pregnant. It's just crazy that the relationship that we almost care the least about now has suddenly become the most serious. Mm-hmm. But I did actually like really, really, really like this scene. Not even, you know, separate from the whole Penny backstory, just the connection between the two of them in general and them kind of, you know, that vulnerability and the honesty they both show each other. This really started to feel like they, you know, are a couple, like a serious couple.
Penny's good at reeling her back in, you know, they're a good yin and yang to each other. They complement each other's personalities. And yeah, I agree. Honestly, they're in a good spot right now. So I'm kind of rooting for them, and it's going to be best for their baby. And the baby seems like he's going to be cool as shit with all his powers. So yeah, I'm rooting for him.
I did ask a few episodes ago when they broke up to the Brooks, Kyle and Brian, if they thought that Jenny 23 was going to continue to be a thing even after this breakup. And I think you both of you guys said, I can see it happening. You know, like, I don't think you didn't discontinue it right at that moment, but I think the baby was obviously the huge part in this whole thing of keeping their relationship together.
It also just cracked me up that we weren't thinking about the fact that Stella, Julia's actress, got pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, during the filming,
none of us did.
The whole concept of a baby didn't even cross either of our minds. Like, I had no idea this is how they were going to kind of bring them back together.
It's a cool way to add in a real world tie into a TV show. You know, I like that a lot. I think this might be one of the first times I've ever actually heard of something like this on a TV show for me personally.
Where they like made the character pregnant because the actress was pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually they're just trying to hide it. How I Met Your Mother until they finally just had to take a leave of absence. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They did it well. It felt organic, maybe a little bit sped up, but it did feel, wow, Kyle.
Is this organic?
Rick and Morty number two. This organic? This was organic for sure. So to finish off this episode, though, we are at the final scene, and it is Penny walking in on Hyman, who is holding a bloody nose in the physical cottage. She's just sitting on the steps, and Hyman says immediately, like, I tried to talk to him, have a conversation with him, and he just punched me. And Hyman just dips. He walks right out the front door, entered Fog 17 holding the circumstance panel. Yeah. Hyman really fucked off. I'm actually pretty pissed at him. That's the guy he tries to strike up a conversation with. But Fog tells him, he says, let this be my last lesson to you as Dean. Don't make too many enemies because they might find each other. And Penny surmises that he's talking about the couple. I really liked this out of Penny. He was just like, whoa, I cannot let you leave here with that panel. This is some fate of the world shit right here. And then, of course, Julia walks in and Dean Fogg's like, are you stupid enough to try and stop me? This Dean Fogg is a fucking action hero, man. He is right with the one-liners. I mean, not a hero. He's a villain, honestly. But like, he is killing it, this Dean Fogg. So self-assured. But yeah. He's not stupid enough to intervene, and he lets Dean Fogg pass with the circumstance panel, and Penny's just like, they got to steal this world seed now. We're running out of time. The couple has everything.
We only have two episodes left. We need to hurry the fuck up.
Yeah, for real. They're just adding these cliffhangers as we have two episodes. I guess we're not supposed to know that there's two episodes left or whatever. Who knows?
Well, but the season, you can know that, yeah, but not the series.
But it's just like, we're getting thrown these cliffhangers when there's two episodes left. Like, what's going on?
I will say that this is one of the worst lines of the season when Fogg says, not my world, not my problem. And Penny just says, then I guess I'm your problem. I was just like, bro, come on. You're better than that.
Penny definitely has had some better comebacks than that.
Yeah, that was just complete cornball. I was like, nah, we're better than this, magicians.
I do want to. I'm going to pull a poll here and just jump us back a little bit to Hyman getting punched in the face. I just feel bad for Hyman. Like, he just got this pep talk to, you know, become a person and just be in this body. And he's like, I tried to spark a conversation with this guy and he just punched me in the face. I want to go back to stasis now. You know, that's how he's probably thinking.
If he's been following everything, he would know who Fog 17 is and know that he's a dick. So, no, that's on Hyman inviting a conversation with him.
I was going to say the same.
Going into a cell. Yeah.
Okay, he maybe was asking for it. Then it's just Hyman's stupidity. Maybe I shouldn't feel bad for him.
I need Hank Fogg to come back from the etheric realm and hit Fog 17 with a nice right cross. No magic. Just knock him out cold. We need the historic comeback, or not historic, heroic comeback with a nice fucking soundtrack behind it.
Yeah, I would love that. Fog 40 versus 17. The forces of good versus evil. Villain is lemons. Are you kidding me, bro?
And then all of a sudden,
is definitely a lemon.
And then all of a sudden, Cocaine Fog shows up.
Ooh. Oh my god, hell yeah! Then we get a civil rights hero, 1990 Fog comes.
All right, we have a lot. We have a lot to cover in these next two episodes. Like, there is just so much. Julia's pregnancy. We have evil Fog. We have the couple, the seed, Fillory. Like, all that in two episodes. What are you guys thinking coming up?
I mean, also we have to somehow figure out how Hyman and Fenn are going to get together.
Yeah. We got to figure out how Todd comes back too.
True. There's a lot of loose threads here.
And you guys are mentioning a comeback from Dean Fogg from the ethereal realm. Like, so much shit to cover in 2 hours of episodes.
I mean, I'm going to be disappointed if we don't get Fogg 40 or Todd. I'm going to be sad.
Now that you're saying them together, those names, it's like they have to, right? You know, like it's Fogg and Todd. Fogg and Todd.
Dude, they should have a spinoff. Yeah, Fogg and Todd.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure there's a fan fiction with Fogg and Todd in the ethereal realm together.
Is it?
Are you fucking yanking my chain?
I just made that up.
You motherfucker.
It's a little hot and spicy.
I think we just made another Binge Town exclusive here.
God damn, that would be awesome.
I don't know. I think next episode has a lot of potential because I think they're going to have to confront the couple head on and steal this world seed. So I could see episode 12 being that whole thing and probably Alice and Katie get their revenge on the couple. And that leaves us episode 13 for dealing with Roop in Fillory and seeing Q one last time. Hopefully.
Oh, maybe. Yes.
Come on, in the last episode of the series? Although I don't think we will get it because they didn't know it was the last episode of the series, but maybe we get it. I hope we get it.
What I'm picturing is Alice in a magical battle with the couple, and then Q kind of not like manifest, I'm not the right word, but like when Teen Gohan takes down Cell at the end of the Cell games and Goku's like kind of there behind him, like Father with the Kamehameha. If Q gets in there too and helps her, that'd be crazy.
Yep. Jimmy, shout out to you for saying Kamehameha, because not many people know that's the actual name of it. It's not Kamehameha, it's Kamehameha.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmytown TV, baby.
Woo! Also, I'll write that fan fiction.
Also, shout out Jason Diaz for his... he had that one Instagram post of him, his old 8-year-old drawings of like Dragon Ball GT looked fucking sweet. I'm impressed. Those were good drawings for an 8-year-old. I don't know if you guys saw that on his Instagram.
I did.
Yeah. It was cool.
I used to do the same thing. Drawing DBZ characters was the go-to.
Hell yeah.
Definitely think of Kyle too. When I just think of all those anime drawings in the room. We're getting sidetracked as always. Kyle, you have something to say.
Yeah. The last comment I'll make on the episode, this is actually funny that this will be the second, the 100 reference, but I just couldn't stop smiling when they're going to look for the Ark in Vancouver, and that just the whole time I was just thinking about the 100.
We also cover the 100 for all our listeners. All right guys, so let's finish this episode strong. Kathleen's not here to give us the bang kill marry, so let's do our best. We'll think of something good here. Let's do Martin Chatwin the Beast, George from the couple, and Everett the boring ass librarian who wanted to become a god. What do you do? Go. Bank, kill, marry.
Yeah, so these are our big bads, I guess, is kind of the genre of them. And I can start us off.
That pause says otherwise.
I'm going to kill George from the couple. Cutting off Alice's fingers is worse than cutting off Penny's hands. Because Penny 40 deserved it. And that's unforgivable. Cutting off Alice's fingers. Come on. Those are her phalanges. She needs them. She's the Hermione Granger of this world. Like, he's going to get his just desserts, but I got a bad vibe from George. So I'm going to kill him. I'm going to bang Everett because he is the odd man out. And I, you know, he's better than George, but like, I don't want to marry him as much as Martin. And Martin is just charismatic. If he wasn't evil and the Beast, he would be a good guy to be around. He's, you know, an adventurer, like I said, charismatic. And those pipes, my God, that man knew how to sing.
Plus, B-Toms likes old man penis.
Damn. Nah, I just like that's sucking heads, man.
I just like sucking heads.
That's me. Like... You know me. You know my kink, man. I all like right, sucking right. heads.
It's that bald Everett head that's got him going.
Yeah, man.
All right, B-Toms, run us through again. Marrying
Martin, aka the Beast, banging Everett, killing George.
All right, I'll jump in here. I'm going to actually go opposite. I'm marrying George, okay, because he's so strong and respected, he can protect me. Okay, I can just live with him forever and just feel protected.
I want to interject. I would say the Beast toe to toe with George from the couple. That's a fight I want to be a part of.
I'm going to interject your interjection and just say we definitely need to do a who's strongest character bracket with George and all that. That'd be fun. All right, go ahead.
I agree that Martin could protect me, but maybe I'll get to marry the couple too, like George and whoever the other person is that we don't know.
It's a package deal.
Package deal. I'm going to bang Martin Chatwin. I'm going to steal a little Kyle action here and say the pillow talk will probably be phenomenal. You know, he gives me some backstory knowledge of Fillory, little spell knowledge, teach me some new magic. And then I'm killing Everett because he's boring. You know, I just think he's boring. I don't need him.
I want to see if one of you two make the point that made me want to change something.
I don't know if I'll make your specific point, but I'm going to, like you said, marry Martin because that charisma he brings, that singing, that upbeat vibe, besides all the killing and all that shit. fuck that.
Plus the accent. You gotta love the accent.
Love the accent. So
don't worry about the killing part, Dave, because they're all killers.
That is also very true. I'm going to marry Martin Chatwin. I'm going to kill Everett, because like Jimmy said, boring. That dude was fucking stiff as a board. Fuck that guy. Hated his character.
And not in a good way, stiff as a board.
And George knows his ways around some knots, if you couldn't tell with Alice and Katie. So if that's your kink, which it could be, right, for Dave. Me, you know, I can get into that. So
Let him know, Dave. Tie me up,
George. Tie me up.
There's the next sound bite for the episode.
All right. And I will play us out. I'm going to copy Dave. So I'm going to kill Everett because he has zero redeeming qualities.
Yep.
I'm going to bang George. I'm going to take Jimmy's reasoning a little bit. And if there's a decent chance I can get a threesome out of it, then why not? You know, that sounds good to me. And I'm going to marry Martin Chatwin because, like you guys said, whatever, charismatic, the pipes. And also, I'm more than willing to make the heel turn to be evil. And I feel like you'd have the most fun being evil with him.
That's, you know, so
in
true,
fillery,
dude.
Like just cavorting around doing shit in fillery. And also, he can teach me that little two-step he does in the first episode when he comes into the lab. Dude, me and Martin Chatwin, hands behind our backs, just two-stepping around fillery, killing people, bro. That two-step, sounds like on. Something I'm doing.
Oh, you kill me.
Okay, so neither of you two did make the point that made me want to change to bang George, kill Everett, for the sole reason of Everett is directly culpable for the death of a Mr. Quentin Coldwater. So fuck him, fuck his entire family.
We'll never be able to get
I
want to
kill him. But you know what? You know what? BKMs are sacred. They are holy. Yeah. Once it is said on the mic, there are no take backsies. It is written.
Yeah, so B-Toms will bang him, and then he'll be the test dummy for the first ever Bingetown guillotine.
I was just going to say that, too. Fuck that guy.
And we can give him a Bingetown wig, too, with his bald head, man.
Yeah, and then will suck on it.
Okay. Keep an eye out for our continued coverage of The Magicians. We're going to be covering each episode of Season 5 week by week. We're getting towards the end. Two more left, 12 and 13. We are shaping up for a great finish, so keep listening. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on BingetownTV.com and subscribe to our show on Spotify, the Apple Podcast app, or wherever else you may find your podcast. Once again, we are Bingetown TV. And thanks for listening.
Huzzah! No, huzzah. It was supposed to be huzzah. Yeah,
I know. I was gonna huzzah, but I thought I hit my huzzah quota for the episode.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.